But I was interested to see, of the comparisons of these compounds, that Winstrol was really far up the chain as far as being anabolic and as far as actually growing new tissue. I thought that that was interesting, and I don't think I've really given it the credit, I guess. But looking at it, man, I'll tell you, I feel like it's always been such a dramatic physical appearance on stage once you've added it in. Granted, assuming that somebody is absolutely peeled to begin with. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. All of our programming is brought to you by you, the people of Patreon. Thank you very much for supporting the show. We've got a couple Patreon questions today. We're also brought to you by Strom Sports Nutrition. If you're in the UK, you get some great health and performance supplements from them. We're brought to you by evalbloodanalysis.com. Get your lab work done by Dave in the UK. And we're brought to you, of course, by truenutrition.com. Use our code THINK over there for high quality third-party tested supplements, and supplementsource.ca for our Canadians. Great deals that change week to week. Dave, we've got a bunch of listener questions as we always do. You were just on the It's Just Bodybuilding podcast. We'll maybe talk a little bit about that. And we're gonna lead the show today by talking about Winstrol. Winstrol, topic of the day, Dave. You excited?
Yay!
All right, that's the attitude, man. So we were asked about Christmas cabbage the last couple episodes. Matt Blevins and everybody else will see. He'll be happy. Everybody will be happy to see that the cabbage is back.
Guess who's back? The cabbage is back.
Yes. So tell us all about Winstrol. Yeah, it's a real tough one. Right? That's how you pronounce it?
Yeah. Oral, commonly, though, obviously there are people, UGLs, that have done injectable versions of orals, Winstrol being one of the more popular ones. Generally dosed in 10s or 50s. DHT based, does not aromatize, but also has an anti-progestogenic effect. Now, oh God, hang on, I did a lot of shit on this the other week for somebody and I can't remember it all. So, in our bodies, progesterone plays a role in the manufacture of a natural anti-inflammatory. So one of the roles of progesterone is to help with the reduction and management of inflammation in the joints. Obviously, we've got joints all over our body, and you know, they're bonal joints with ligament and cartilage and everything else in between, but they need lubrication and they need management. Now, Winstrol has got a reputation of causing joint pain, and one of the reasons for that is this anti-progesterone effect means that we lower the production of the natural anti-inflammatory, and therefore, in people that are sensitive to it, because it doesn't happen to everybody by any standard, but in people that are sensitive to it, you can start to get a little bit of joint irritation and joint pain. It can be quite severe in some people, but I would have said that those are people who potentially have underlying issues or sensitivity towards that sort of thing. As a compound, very, very useful pre-comp from a bodybuilding point of view. It's anti-estrogenic as well, but that anti-progestogenic action as well just gives you that little bit more dryness and crispness if everything else is on point. Ain't a miracle worker. It ain't going to do it with a shitload of water. But if everything is on point, it will help. You get a sort of harder, drier look with Winstrol. It's not an ineffective power drug in its own right. You know, it's a decent compound, will pull fairly decent results. It has a little bit of a place in powerlifting, but only if you're not affected by the jointal issues that it can cause. Obviously, if you are sensitive to them, then that's definitely an environment you wouldn't want to use it in. But I would have said it's where it really comes into itself is the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks in a prep.
Yep. I would agree with that. I think all the side effects are, you know, dose dependent. I figured since we were doing this, I did a little bit of digging, meaning like I went to Wikipedia and I went to a few websites just to kind of get some data, because I wasn't sure. Like, you know, Winstrol, obviously everything we're talking about, this is information that I use daily as a coach, but like knowing like the historical facts and stuff, that's not something that I need to apply day to day. So it's not something I have committed to memory. So I looked it up, Dave, and it says it was approved by the FDA in 1962. Okay. Now that was as an oral tablet, and then Winstrol V was invented later as, a water-based injectable for horses, but that was a completely different thing. It came into the picture a little bit later. So I thought that that was interesting. I never knew that until I read that the tablets were initially the first thing to be approved.
Yeah, I knew the tablets were first. I wasn't so sure whether there'd ever been a pharmaceutical injectable version or not, to be honest. Obviously, we know it's commonly available as a UGL.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about the veterinary one, to be fair.
I would say, that, yeah, like you said, the tablets, I think oral is way more likely to be used nowadays, like versus the water-based injectable is, in my opinion, kind of obsolete. Especially if you're doing a contest prep, there's a good chance that oral is going to be maybe like that last 4 weeks, you know, something like that. We'll say the last part of the show, and there's a good chance you're using other compounds. So adding another injection on top of that gets to be, you know, literally a pain, you know, logistically.
Well, the other thing is with the injectable, you can actually drink it.
Yeah, yeah. For the same effect, but like cost to bend, you know, like the cost is usually be higher, right?
You sort of get to the point where if you're going to drink it, you might as well have the tablets in the first place.
Yeah.
It sort of seems a bit pointless to buy the injectable and then drink it, but you can actually drink it. A lot of people are nervous around the water-based injectables for obvious reason. For those that don't understand why, water has a much greater risk of bacterial load and bacterial carrying.
Yeah.
So even biostatic water, which has alcohol in it, is not as good as an oil base.
Absolutely. Original uses, they'd listed appetite stimulant as being one of the original uses, as well as retaining muscle from muscle wasting. It was used for bone density for women that were postmenopausal.
Yeah, I was going to say, osteoporosis was one of its very early uses as well, and I think it was probably one of its main uses was osteoporosis for women.
Then they said it was discontinued for insufficient data in 1984, but it still can be prescribed, I guess, off-label.
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I'm not so sure what the crack is now from a manufacturer point of view. You get this with a lot of the orals. They're still available as pharma product, but they're not made by any of the big companies, because you'll get people saying, oh, I've got Pfizer, whatever, you know, and it's like, well, Pfizer haven't made that for 30 frigging years, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there are some pharma companies, some smaller pharma companies that do it off license, but a lot of the big companies have dropped the oral anabolics as I think one of the only ones that's still regularly made pharmaceutically is oxymephalon.
Is it?
Yeah, that's still a prescribed treatment for anemia. I actually know people that are on it.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So DHT compound, right? We cover our basics. And it is liver toxic. So not only, because you mentioned like the potential joint issues for some people, the liver stuff, that's going to be for everybody. And even if you were to take the injectable, that's only going to miss the first pass. So it is still going to circulate back around and definitely tax the liver.
Yeah, even as an injectable, it's still a 17 alkylated compound. So it's going to cause issues. They stress the liver because one of the liver's role is to break down medication, is to metabolize foreign substances in your bloodstream. That's part of the liver's job. So the liver is our major detoxing organ. It cleans our blood. And one of its major roles is the breakdown of foreign compounds, be that medications or be that illicit drugs.
Or even any of hormones in our bodies.
Well, it does that as well, yes. But so, from a medication point of view, a compound would be not effective as a medication if it got broke down by the liver immediately. So the drugs are designed to withstand liver breakdown, but in turn, that means the liver gets very stressed because it's trying to break them down and can't do it.
Yeah.
So that's where this liver toxicity comes from. It's the stress that these compounds generate because they resist breakdown by the liver.
Yeah.
And there are other reasons as well, like just sheer chemical toxicities, but the main issue is the 17 alkylation makes it very difficult for the liver to break it down, and as a result the liver gets very stressed by it. For those who didn't know,
it's already 5-alpha reduced, so using finasteride with it isn't gonna help to protect your hair anymore. But I think all of these side effects, the liver, hair, joints, dose and duration, are really the critical factors. That's what I'm looking at, you know what I mean, as a bodybuilder, as a coach, is, you know, how can we get what we want out of, you know, a particular supplement while also trying to minimize issues or potential risks. And I think that those are the two big things, is dose and duration. You know, a lot of times people are like, well, if I'm going to take an oral, then I'll just take like a bunch of Tutka and NAC, glutathione. It's like, yeah, I mean, all those things can be helpful, but at the same time, like, just how about don't take as much and definitely don't take it that long, you know?
I think the other thing that people fail to recognize is total toxicity of what they're doing.
You mean like all the compounds together?
No, I mean like life together.
Oh, okay.
So people are wary of orals, liver toxicity, right?
Okay, yeah.
But then you've also got to see stuff like, what medications am I taking? Am I taking painkillers? Am I drinking alcohol?
Mm.
Am I taking recreational drugs? Because, again, that's all workload on the liver, particularly stuff like alcohol and painkillers. So when you consider, you know, oh, yeah, I'm only taking one oral. Yeah, but what else are you doing in your life that might be stressing your liver?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think some people forget to look at the broader picture because they're only considering the oral anabolic to be a problem, forgetting that there's lots of things that we do that are like drinking, which is very socially accepted. It's not, you know, it's not particularly a bad thing to do in any way, that can also have a massive knock-on effect to how well our liver is supported. So just bear the lifestyle in mind when you start looking at total toxicity in anabolic cycles.
Yeah, I've seen it talked about for lowering SHBG, both in a bodybuilding setting and in a TRT setting. I've seen it prescribed at around 20-25 milligrams. In fact, I've had a couple clients within the past few years that had it prescribed from TRT clinics. And some of those guys had it prescribed in combination in the same pill with Anavar. So you'd get like 25 of each type thing.
Yeah, I struggle with that. I'm not saying they don't do it. My argument is that I struggle with any sound medical argument as why you would introduce another anabolic to lower SHBG when there are both natural alternatives and non-impacting anabolic alternatives like Proviron.
And it's not, it's something you're not going to be able to do long term, you know? So once you stop taking it, that SHBG effect is going to reverse completely.
And for the most part, from a cycle point of view, nobody needs to lower their SHBG any further. It's going to be lower anyway.
Mm.
That can differ with TRT. And granted, there are circumstances with TRT where lowering SHBG is going to help the patient. Quite substantially, but in a cycle format, I've yet to see anyone have SHB that's even bottom end of natural range. It's always much below.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no, that'll be somebody, there always is, but it's not a common issue. So for the vast majority of people, lowering SHB on cycle is not really anything you need to be particularly bothered about, but it can come into its own when it comes to TRT dosing, yes.
Yeah, like you said, everybody is different. Like as far as side effects go. One more too. Of course, with all of this DHT, you know, it's going to have a knock on your cholesterol as well, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, VAR's particularly nasty for increasing LDL. But they all will lower HDL. And those that are anti-estrogenic, and in Winstrel's case, both anti-estrogenic and anti-estrogenic, do tend to have a slightly bigger sledgehammer against HDL levels. Orals are particularly bad for it, along with Primo.
I have one client who I hope is listening right now. I won't mention his name. We had been on a very mild cycle, and we look at his labs, and all of a sudden he's having major cholesterol issues. His LDL is out of range up now, and it hadn't been before, just slightly. And his HDL is dropped down to like 24 or something, okay? And then he says, hey, I got to tell you something. I've been taking 20 milligrams of Anavar for a while now, and I didn't tell you about it. It's like, oh, there we go. Because we weren't doing anything. Like, it really kind of puzzled me. Based off of what we're doing, I wouldn't have expected this. And the first thing he says is, yeah, I've never had cholesterol issues like this, you know, before. You know, diet's real healthy. Eating way healthier and more consistent than you ever had in the past. Guy's making incredible progress. Like I said, cycle is real mild. And then all of a sudden, his HDL is just destroyed. And he tells me, I didn't tell you I was running Anavar.
Is the cycle mild? Because he's lied about his oral use. Is he lying about how many drugs he's taking?
I believe him. I think I believe him.
That trust is broken now. Yeah. You can't trust him. He'll be cheating on you as well, Scott, with another coach.
So here is my experience. Like you said, everybody's different, but I found that for me, if I kept it under 8 weeks, 8 weeks was my outside max use, and I would say that 50 milligrams at most. But when I ran it for 8 weeks successfully, I tapered it up. And I started with like, I think like 25 for the first 2 weeks. And then I went to like 35. And then I went to like 45. And I worked my way up to the point where over an 8 week course, I worked my way up to like 60, I think. But it was like mainly though, I'd say I'd go that way. And that worked well for me. Or I would just do it like the last 3 to 4 weeks at around 50. And I found that to be really successful too. That's my personal experience and what I've seen work well with others. At least they haven't complained of joint issues, keeping it at that 4 week mark.
Going back to the cholesterol thing, just as well, you know, some of the effects of these drugs is unavoidable. You take these drugs, this is what's going to happen.
Sure.
And there's nothing you can particularly do to stop that from happening. That's not to say there aren't things you can do to help the situation. So a bit of forward planning. If you know you're going to go into a cycle that's heavy DHT driven, or you know you're going to have some DHT orals towards the back end of it, prior to that cycle, focus on getting your HDL as high as you can.
Yeah.
And then you have some ceiling room. You have a buffer that you've got to get through before you start going into a negative effect with the HDL. So just, you know, a bit of forward planning can really help offset some of the problems you're going to experience when using certain compounds.
You know what I thought was interesting? The anabolic effect. So Scott Stevenson and I just did a podcast comparing different compounds and trying to answer the question, do all steroids more or less have the same anabolic effect? Because that's been something that's been, you know, brought up. You've heard it talked about a lot in the last year or two, right? You know, that's people have been bringing up that like, well, the nitrogen retention is going to be the same from each compound. And so, yes, all steroids are going to be the same. You know, if you watch this video, guys, I think you're going to see that that's completely not correct. But I was interested to see of the comparisons of these compounds that Winstrel was really far up the chain as far as being anabolic and as far as actually growing new tissue. I thought that that was interesting, and I don't think I've really given it the credit, I guess. But looking at it, man, I'll tell you, I feel like it's always been such a dramatic physical appearance on stage once you've added it in. Granted, assuming that somebody is absolutely peeled to begin with.
I think one of the problems with Winstrel taking it out of the pre-comp environment is basically the issues that you have around anti-progestogenic effects.
Yeah.
As a compound and its ability to milligram per milligram to be effective at building muscle mass. I rate it. I rate it very highly. The problem is to use it for a length of time or a dose that's going to be particularly supportive of that means you are possibly going to run into problems with joints. Yeah. So it's like, do I take 60 milligrams of Winstrol for 8 weeks and end up in agony for the last two? Or do I take, slightly more of Anavar or slightly less of Oxy and still get the same gains I'm going to get, but not end up with the joint problems at the end of the day? So I think that's what limits it as an off-season compound for a lot of people. But like you say, he can really polish a turd in the last 4 or 5 weeks, couldn't he?
Yeah. So looking at the chart, it says that Winstrol was shown to be 50% stronger than D-ball at 43 milligrams a day. But like you said, how long can you tolerate that for without joint? There's other factors that come into that,
Yeah, well, the other factors as well is going to be the fact that if it's a standalone, you're not going to have any estrogenic support by week six, and that's going to start creating negative issues downstream, which will affect progress as well. Yeah. And I think I wanted to be on that podcast. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but because I was curious as to, with these studies, do they factor in the downstream effects that these drugs have on other hormones, or is it purely on the anabolic effect of that?
I believe it's just completely standalone. And Scott does go into some of the stuff that, how can we really, some of the problems that come in when you're really trying to compare these things,
Yeah, because
if you were to run, say, 50 Winstrol and then from there run 50 D-ball, well, it would be hard to compare because you already ran you'd have to go back in time, to having never run the 50 Winstrol in order to get a true read on that 50 D ball,
Well, the other thing is that you run 50 Winnie and somewhere around week six, you're going to start to experience low estrogen, and that's going to start to have a negative impact on muscular progress, where D ball may not be as effective milligram for milligram, but you can run it for longer and you'd have the estrogenic support, which is going to support tissue building as well. And so that's where it gets really complex to balance these drugs, because you've got that fact that estrogen plays a significant role in growth.
Yeah.
And at a point with any DHT oral, the estrogen impact is going to be so negative that it's actually going to start to affect your progress.
Yeah, I can see that, sure.
So there's that element as well, which is difficult to factor into it.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a bunch of listener questions, so I'll get ready to jump into those. But I hope this helps everybody overall. I mean, I would consider it to be one of the most popular compounds ever. Would you agree with that, Dave? Just like across the match, Ben Johnson, he got caught with it at the Olympics. I think that popularity through mainstream and stuff, it's very well known.
I think from a point of view of cross sports use,
yes, your
big hitters are Winstrol and T-ball.
Yeah, yeah.
I would Winstrol say though, T-ball
D-ball, much more, D-ball more than T-ball, in my opinion.
I give you 10,000 Russians that disagree.
Yeah, but that was just like one little subsect. I'm talking about the masses. And I understand all the Germans that were using T-ball, right? But like, if you go into any high school locker room, where guys are experimenting, there's two things they're going to have. It's D-ball and Winstrol,
Yeah, but if you look at sports performance enhancements, so cheating at the Olympic Games side of things,
historically,
you're looking more T-ball and Winstrol than you are stuff like D-ball. D-ball's never been a popular oral for someone competing in an Olympic sport.
Weightlifting. Yes, Olympic lifting.
Yeah, but the problem with D-ball is it's so detectable and for so fucking long. And the metabolite estrogen is so detectable as well that it's not been a drug that's been popular. So you've got to remember No, I don't believe so. I might be wrong. I'm standing correct. I'll ask Roderick because he's into all the testing and cheating stuff. So
that would be great to have him on. We were talking about having him on. That'd be a, we needed a topic, you know, that'd be a great topic to have him on for.
Okay. Yeah. I'll speak to him. I'll speak to him Friday.
All right, cool. Yeah. Let's see if he'd come on and talk about, like, if not the history, like some of the history of anabolics in sports. That would be cool.
Okay. I'll speak to him.
All right. I like that. Done. Look at that, guys. They've been asking us to get Broderick on too.
Yeah, I'll do that.
You is that okay? Well, you think?
Yeah, I don't see why. You just have to bear with me. The pain's quite bad at the moment. So,
Dave got some weird swelling in his hand yesterday, guys. I'm going to tell everybody, okay? That you got. We recorded It's Just Bodybuilding. You got weird swelling in your hand before the show. He showed me his hand. It looked like it was like blown up like a balloon. And thankfully, the inflammation's gone, but you don't even know why it happened. But you just had that whole heart thing put in. And so it's not like, this isn't like exciting, fun stuff, right?
So I've got arthritis in my left wrist quite bad. So it always hurts, but it's mild, it's tolerable. Every now and again, it'll flare up because I've caught it or I've lifted something incorrectly or whatever it is. 3 days ago, I got immense pain on the opposite side of my wrist. Very localized, very, very intense. And bear in mind, I walked around on a broken ankle for 2 days. To the point where it took me down to hospital, but after 3 hours of them doing F-all, I came home. But it was intensely painful. And then shortly after that, I got a lot of swelling. Because of my kidneys, I'm prone to cellulitis.
Oh.
And so what happens is I'll get an arthritic inflammation. And then somehow, and I don't know how this happens, that then triggers a cellulitis. And it's a sterile cellulitis, but that then triggers basically a faux cellulitis inflammation. The thing is, the arthritic inflammation is just within the joint, so I don't get a lot of swelling. It's just painful. But when the cellulitis kicks in, I get a lot of swelling. That then puts pressure on the arthritic joints and then fires up the arthritis again. So at the moment, I've got swelling discomfort plus pressure on arthritic joints, which is causing even more pain. And I lost track of when I was due my last set of painkillers, and it's just got a little bit more painful than normal, and it's just giving me a bit of shit at the moment.
All right. I'm sorry to hear that, man. And if you want to cut at any point, just say the word, okay?
Yes, just send your check to We Feel Sorry for Dave because he's in a lot of pain, and he needs to buy
a new boat to make him happy.
Yes, for pain management, yes.
A boat... That sounds like you could put that on your taxes, you know, like write off a boat for pain management. Try that. See what happens.
Hey, what's up, guys? I have a lot of people who reach out to me on a regular basis who are trying to more effectively reach their goals. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they're not getting enough protein. And there's only so much chicken breast we can eat through the day, but we can easily add a high-quality protein supplement to boost those numbers up. True Nutrition has just about every protein powder you can think of, from high-quality whey isolate. If you don't tolerate lactose, then you could use their beef isolate, or you could use their pea protein isolate if you don't eat animal products. They literally have everything you could think of. I've believed in them for like a decade before they advertised with us, and they never went out of their way to say like, hey, we want to promote our stuff through you. I literally asked them because it's a company that I believe in, and at the end of the day, I want to see you guys reach your goals as effectively as possible. So if you use our code THINK at True Nutrition, you'll get some savings, you'll help to support our programming, and you'll get some high quality products to more effectively reach your goals faster.
Oh man, we had this guy ask this question. Literally, he posted it like 15 times, Dave, on the show. Should we even do his answer? Are we rewarding him for having commented the same question 15 times? That's my question to you first. And second, is it really a bad thing, or did he help boost us in the algorithm?
I think we should. So I get a lot of people that message me almost demanding answers. They don't bother with that. All right, Dave, how you doing? Hope you're well. How's the family? Can you please answer this? Which, I don't know. Sometimes I think, you know what? All right, at least you're being direct. I'm not trying to bullshit.
Yeah.
But then the other sort of thing is, you're only talking to me. And the other thing is, I get people that try to be my friend, when all they actually really want is free advice.
Mm.
So I'm in two minds with this, because one thing, there's something for being direct, but two, there's something for being an impatient twat and you should just answer once and wait.
All right. Well, we'll take the question. He says, if I take Tren, will it affect my girl? Like, can it be transferred?
Well, I'm not even answering that. He doesn't deserve an answer. He can piss off. Yes, you'll grow.
Yeah.
What, no.
Yeah.
Well, it may affect her because you might turn into a twat.
Yeah, it might affect her a lot. You know what I mean? That's a good you answer. Might,
you might either turn into a complete arsehole or you might start raping her.
We can't say that word, Dave. We can't say that word. I definitely have to edit that word out.
Yes. Okay, you may start being demanding sexually and she might get a little bit worn out.
There we go.
But, there's going to be no transference. The only way you transfer anabolic action is through a topical gel and skin contact. That has happened, but from a point of view of injectable, no, you're not giving her your trend, mate. You don't need to worry. You save it all for yourself. You're good.
You know what you do have to worry about, and Victoria and I were just talking about this on the weekend, vaginal estrogen. So women use vaginal estrogen. It will sit in there and stay active for a long time. So you might have put it in last night. You could definitely transfer that.
Oh, that's just, I've just found that incredibly amusing.
I've been having a lot of sex lately. I've had to take a lot of AI, you know, it wouldn't even matter really, because you're taking direct estrogen at that point. I got to take a lot of SERMs, you know.
Yeah, that is funny.
How about this one from Casey? He says, I get bad smelling sweat from NPP. Girls can tell when I'm blasting again. My bed sheets smell like sushi rice, vinegar mostly. What is the cause? It goes away after a few weeks after I stop taking it. Notice he says, girls can tell when I'm blasting. My bed sheets smell like sushi rice, vinegar. Girls. How many women, how many ladies, I wonder, is this like a large poll? I'm wondering if Casey's taking. How many women are smelling Casey's bed sheets? I think it's a humble brag here. You know what I'm saying?
Usually ammonia smell is protein, is the fact that you're using protein for energy sources. So you could potentially be worsening the problem if your protein is too high and your carbs aren't high enough. So there's definitely something to look at there.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly familiar with why DECA or MPP would cause this problem.
There's look something up. Carry on. I'm going to look something up.
And I really, generally, ammonia smells, I've always put down to burning proteins, and therefore you need to look at diet rather than drugs in the most part. I don't think DECA has a particularly greater action around nitrogen or protein assimilation than any other compound.
There was a word. It breaks down into something. And it starts with a P. But there's something in sweat that it does have like a vinegar smell. Anyway.
Yeah, there is. There is, but my understanding is that when you get very pronounced ammonia smells or vinegar smells, it's to do with the level of protein you're taking more than the compound. But, I mean, obviously what you're saying is it only happens when he's using nandrolone.
Yeah.
And I've no reason to doubt that, you know, his observation is correct. So, but I'm not sure what is specific around nandrolone that would cause it.
Propionic acid. Sweat breaks down into something called propionic acid, which comes in the same family, comes from the same family as vinegar. I know that like hormones can change your sweat. I noticed L-carnitine, man. When I've used the injectable L-carnitine for an extended time, like it's been in my system, I get bad BO from it. Like, I'll take a shower and I'll stink like by the end of the day again. Like, I'm not a stinky person usually.
I beg to differ.
You can't smell me from there. Can you smell me from there?
No, bro. I'll smell you when you've been here.
That's not fair. I was eating British food, sausages, and travel.
Oh, blame the British food. Next, you'll be blaming the sausage you carry around in your bag for 2 days.
Yeah, that was the sausage in my backpack you smelled.
strange man is Scott.
Carry. Did you guys ever take that out of your trash in the upstairs bathroom? Or is it still up there?
Yeah, no, we just left the trash in the bathroom for 6 years. Well,
it was the guest room. I didn't know. Maybe you guys didn't go back in there for anything.
Controlled burning after you'd been in it.
All right, what else do we have? Okay, here we go. So somebody said, question, how do I run steroids, but especially EQ, and not become super vascular? Because I'm already lean and tall and vascular, and even a low dose of EQ is starting to turn me into a mutant. He adds, and Dave is going to say, then don't take steroids. Dave, I need an answer that's not that, please. Thanks, fellas. You're the best source for info out there.
Get that was fat. You.
That's
Get
what I
fat,
said.
Then.
That's what I told him.
I mean, vascularity to a large extent is genetic. The vascularity trait is genetic.
Yeah.
But obviously, the leaner you are, the more visual your vascularity is going to be. By taking anabolics, obviously, your arterial network will be fuller, so obviously more pronounced. So the only way you're going to really get rid of that is by having more body fat to cover up the vascularity. I don't really know any other way around it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said too, man. Or like he mentioned, don't take gear, you know?
Well, I mean, obviously, if a drug's particularly bad for it and it's causing you problems, and I am assuming that it's that bad that you're getting noticed and therefore people are assuming or suggesting that you may be partaking in anabolics and that's why your vascularity is so high. So the only other thing I can think of is, you know, eat and soften your condition a little bit so it does look a bit more hidden. Yeah. I know it's not a great solution, but I genuinely can't think of anything else.
Ooh, I got another one. Put on a long sleeve shirt. Put a hoodie on.
Become Muslim and cover yourself from head to toe.
There you go. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, that was my answer. Interestingly, somebody chimed in. You know, sometimes we have guys that will give their own accounts. Guy said, I have an answer as I've already faced this. He says, run melanotan or simply get really tan and it's way less noticeable. I'm the same way, bro. I look ridiculous, white as a ghost with blue veins. I mean, I don't know. Then you're just going to be like super jacked and tan looking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an unusual problem.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a fun one to answer.
Yeah, most people are quite keen to be vascular.
Yeah.
It's an unusual problem, but I guess if it's creating unwanted attention and potentially accusations of anabolic use, then you may want it out of the way. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is either water retention to smooth or increase body fat levels.
You eat more salt, you know, just like, because I'll tell you what, you get used to any salt that you're eating. But if you go hard, like if you're at 10 grams a day, you're not going to be able to drink enough fluid to flush that, you know.
You might have a heart attack in 5 years and die from it, but we won't worry about that. But one.
People won't think you're wearing gear, though, the whole time, like all 5 years. It'll be good. George, he says, hi, Scott. Big fan of the show. You and Dave are pro. Therefore, I will ask you my question. Which training approach is better? Training more muscle parts and going less to gym 3 times per week, or training less body parts and going to the gym more frequently? I personally train 4 to 5 times per week, and I tend to train 3 to 4 body parts. He says he's 80 kilograms and he's 16 to 18% body fat at 6 foot tall. What's 80 kilograms in pounds about, Dave?
£176.
Okay, so he's pretty slim then at 6 foot. Mm. I mentioned this, so I've got a little more info. I said, hey, great topic, George. A lot is going to come down to what you enjoy. You know, Scott Stevenson kind of introduced me to that idea a while back, and we've talked about it. You're going to enjoy the training plan. You're going to do the training plan that you enjoy the most. You're going to stick to that. You're going to get the most out of it that way. So there is an element of, like, what do you enjoy? But then it also relates to, like, what have you done before that? And I can get into that more, but meaning, like, if you've been doing a bro split for 5 years, then maybe going to high frequency push pull legs might be more beneficial. You know, what are you not doing now? That would be kind of a thought. But then I asked him for a little more insight too, and he says, I asked him, like, what is his intensity like? And he says, I work out intensely for each body part. I will do 20 to 25 sets using various techniques, mechanics. I'm just curious as to whether rest days play a massive role. You have pros who almost never leave the gym, and you also have people who are jacked and train 3 days. Thank you. It'll be great to hear you and Dave on this topic. So if he's doing 20 to 25 sets, that automatically tells me how intense he's training. You know what I mean? Like, you can only train so intense and do 25 sets, right?
There's a few things. First thing is the 3 day week and chat and the pros living in the gym is bullshit.
Yeah.
There are a wide range of approaches to training. But the simple fact is you either train intensely or you train for a long period of time. You cannot do both.
Yeah.
Based on his stats, I would assume that he struggles to put weight on. So from a point of view of body type, he's probably looking at better, more of a high-intensity approach, short-duration workouts, rather than long-volume workouts, just from conserving as much calories as he can. So he's got as much time out of the gym to recover and grow, because he's naturally not going to want to put the mass on.
Yeah.
So that the sort of hard gainer approach. So that would be the first thing. Enjoyment of what you do is definitely very important. Like you said, if you're doing 4 body parts and you're doing 25 sets per body part, I would then argue that that's not super intense training. Personally, I've always liked a lower volume but a higher frequency. So I'd look to train the body part twice a week, but do quite low set volume each time. So it might only be 12 sets, 14 sets for a major body group. But I'd do that twice a week. So I've always enjoyed that approach, but I credit, you know, you can do a large volume and train less frequently, but most people recover muscularly quite quick. Though DOMS can last for several days, but it's also about balancing his energy expenditure in relation to what he needs to recover. What sort of work is he doing? Is his job physical? And like you say, and then balancing that with what he enjoys. For people who enjoy training but are hard gainers, I would definitely go down more the, you know, 1 body part a day or 2 body parts a day. So that they're not hitting the muscle too frequently in view of their recovery capabilities.
Yeah.
So that works well if you enjoy training, but you're a hard gainer because you don't want to be hitting it too often. If you're an easy gainer, you tend to carry more body fat, then you could do a lot more volume and spend a lot more time in the gym because you can afford it. There's several factors that kick into this. Sorry, I just cannot get comfortable at the moment.
That's all right. I'll just say real quick that I think intensity is probably something he could work on. And we just did, Kuba and I put out a show where we talked about learning from other people was really important. Like, intensity is something you have to learn over time. So there's no fault of your own, but being able to get in the gym and train with somebody who is more advanced than you, you're going to pick up cues on intensity and you'll learn to push harder, faster than you will on your own. So my thought to him would be find somebody who's more advanced than he is and go through a workout with him. Even if he has to like pay a good pro who's a hard trainer to put him through a workout, you know, that could be really beneficial to help him. And then from there, start to figure out what you need to do. So
the thing is, if you get to the point where you start thinking and you start stating that you train hard mm-hmm. and you don't think you can train any harder, then you're wrong. And that's probably your biggest mistake. Because you can always train harder.
Yeah.
You can always improve the quality of the rep. You can always increase the stimulus. You can always increase the intensity. And you should be pushing to that every time you train. It's not always about more reps and more weight, but you should always be improving the quality of the rep, improving the intensity. You should always be pushing to make a workout more difficult, to make the stimulus of the muscle greater. That never stops. It doesn't matter how long you've trained, 5 years, 50 years, that never stops. And the day you start thinking I train hard or there's nothing more I need to learn, or I can't push any harder than I am doing, is the day you've gone wrong. Because you may feel you're at your absolute max and limit, but if you start looking back through your workout and analyzing what you do, you will see points that you can improve on. You will see where you can push a little bit harder, where you could have tidied the rep up a little bit more, where you could have done something that would have improved the quality of the rep or the intensity that you were generating in that exercise.
Yeah, treat each set like it's the only one. Don't think about the 24 sets you have ahead of you. If you have 24 sets ahead of you, you are definitely pacing yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. And view it as the last opportunity you're ever going to have to train that body part.
Yeah.
And leave nothing unturned. And that's difficult to do. And that's something, that's a skill that takes years and years to generate. Agreed. To be able to go in the gym and leave everything you have in the gym. It's not something that happens overnight. And just when you think you're at a level where, right, I'm training intensely, you will come across someone who pushes you a little bit further or in a different way. And you'll realize that there's a whole different level of intensity or a whole different way of approaching what you're doing.
Yep.
Learn as many different training styles as you can. And then, because we're not going to train at full max intensity every time we train, because we're just not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we might have had an argument with the missus or the mister, depending. We might have had a crap day at work. We might just be a little bit tired because the dog kept us up all night. Whatever the reason is, there's going to be days when you go in the gym and you haven't got that balls to the wall, heavyweight, all out set in you. But that doesn't mean you can't adapt and go to, say, maybe a time under tension workout or a drop set, superset workout, or something that creates intensity in a different way. But you need to know that. And the only way you're going to know that is by experiencing lots of different training techniques.
Yep.
I spent over 10 years learning how to train from as many different people as I could. Some were just nutters.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might not have been the most beneficial for muscle gains, but it doesn't mean that you didn't still benefit from the experience. You know what I mean?
Because I learned that there was boundaries beyond boundaries that I hadn't approached before.
Yeah.
You know, so I've trained with all sorts of people over the years. And I even learned from people that weren't training intensely, but they just did something that was a little bit different in one exercise. And I was like, I've not seen that before, you know. And so you can always learn. Yeah. And you should always have an appetite for learning when it comes to training. You should never think, I know how to train. You should always think, I've got a good understanding, but I want to improve. I want to progress.
Yeah. And I think he's there. I mean, he's coming to us. He's asking like, hey, what should I do next? So I think he's in a good place. And I think it just sounds like he is newer. Listen, Dave, let's jump to some Uncle Dave's advice and wrap this thing up. That way you can go be uncomfortable somewhere else.
Well, that's not very nice, is it? Oh, so is my pain making you feel uncomfortable? Is that what it is?
Listen, Dave, you squirming around here and being in pain, it's really making me uncomfortable. I don't like personally having to witness this, so I want to get off of this podcast immediately.
I don't give a flying monkey's chuff what you want.
No, we've got a few more questions, but we always have a few more questions. So I say, hey, let's just wrap it up here. We'll jump to some Uncle Dave's advice because people love that. And then, guys, if we didn't get to your questions, you can comment on the next show with your questions, and we'd be happy to take them then.
I do apologize, peoples.
You don't need to.
I just can't seem to get on top of it at the moment.
Yeah, you don't need to apologize, man.
Right. Uncle Dave's advice. Yeah, right. So I had started writing shit down and then I haven't done this week, but I do remember what I wrote down last week.
Okay.
And I'm going to call it the Ferrari syndrome.
Okay.
Why do people buy Ferraris?
Because they want a fast car and to impress people.
Partly right.
I mean, okay, there's probably a lot of reasons. Because you Ferrari, can. Number one, because you can. That's, I think, the first reason.
I think one of the biggest reasons driving behind people driving a Ferrari, buying a Ferrari, is because they want everyone else to know they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because most people that own Ferraris, one, can't drive them to their capabilities. And even if they could, don't have an environment where they could do that.
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, then don't get me wrong, there will be car buffs that generally appreciate the car as a piece of art and a piece of engineering and everything else. But the vast majority of people buy a Ferrari because they want the world to know they can afford it.
Yeah.
In the same way people buy Rolex watches.
Yeah.
Not everybody, because there are serious collectors, but a lot of people buy a Rolex so they can put it on their wrist, and immediately it tells everybody, hi, I'm better than you financially because I can afford this.
Yeah. I would, if I had a Rolex, because I've talked to people who have invested, like they'll buy a watch as an investment. But if you bought that watch as an investment, eventually you're going to want to wear it out. You know what I mean? And I couldn't imagine wearing a watch on my hand personally, just me, that's like $20,000 or whatever, you know, like that blows my mind.
There is obviously a whole different reason for buying when you're buying for investment. You're buying because you know the value is going to go up. You know you're going to make money. I've got a few friends that do that. So, yeah. I mean, and I'm not, by the way, this isn't a criticism. I'm not looking at these people and going, you're a fool, you're an idiot, because that's not the case. It's just important that you recognize why you're doing it. And a lot of this strive for materialistic progress because we think it's going to signify something to the world. It's going to be a drawing pin under our success. It's going to be a flag, you know, in the hill that we've achieved success. That's why I have XYZ.
Yeah.
And the reality is most people are disappointed with that purchase. It doesn't fulfill them in the way they expect it to.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with spending money on what you love. There's nothing wrong with spending money on something flash because you want people to think you're rich. The problem is when you lie to yourself about why you're doing it. Or when you take a bank loan out and put yourself in a negative position to why you're doing it. And the truth is, learn to be confident about you as a person and what you offer as an individual and your self-value and your self-worth rather than what you display to people as materialistic value.
Yeah. Scott's got a good point. Scott Stevenson commented, he said, fit physique wins over a Ferrari or Rolex as a status symbol, in my opinion. That said, you can do the same thing chasing that physique. You know what I mean?
You can, yeah. And I disagree, Mr. Scott. One, because that's a personal attack on me because I'm fat and you can't fight any other way you want.
How dare you?
I know, it's disgusting, isn't it? But the other thing is, I see so many people in this industry with these amazing physiques that are actually destroyed as people.
Yeah.
They have no self-worth. They have no self-value. I caught a post. I even screenshot it, actually. I'm not going to name the person. But they put up this picture of some supplements they were taking, and these were all mental health support supplements. And they were like, these are a game changer. These have saved my life. And straight away, my thought is, if you are in a position where you need a drug to feel good about yourself, and you need to chemically fix yourself on a daily basis to function, then you've got a lot of work to do as a human being in sorting yourself out, because you shouldn't be in that position. Using a chemical as a temporary boost is one thing, no issue. Using a chemical as a day-to-day crux is a different thing. If you're using a chemical or a supplement, and I mean by chemical, I mean natural supplements as well, to support you while you address the problems, yeah, fine, got no issue with that. But if you're addressing mental health issues purely with chems, but not actually working on the reason why you have those mental health issues, then that's, to me, disaster.
Yeah, SSRIs are way more effective with therapy than without.
Exactly, and this is the thing. So, you know, if you're taking Shilajit and you're taking lion's mane and you're taking all these natural supplements, which straight away makes you superior to someone doing SSRIs because you're using natural supplements. It actually doesn't, because you're actually denying what's wrong with you, supplementing with a load of over-the-counter stuff as it may be, but if you're not working on the problem in the first place, you're not fixing anything. In fact, you're just covering it up.
Yeah.
You know, take more time to just look after you and fix you. But that starts by recognizing that you're broken. And that isn't a problem, but everyone has this big judgmental thing around it. And we're hyper aware of mental health now, but now it's become a badge that you wear. I've got mental health problems. Oh, look at me, I've got mental health problems. We've all got mental health problems. It's called life, or a wife. It's one of the two. But we've all got them. You know, you're not nothing special. Just work on yourself. Because at the end of the day, the more you work on yourself, the happier you're going to be. And isn't that really what it's all about?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good message. It's a good Uncle Dave's advice. And Matt Blevin says, thank you guys for the podcast. Think Big Bodybuilding is one of the few things that keeps me sane right now. He said he was going through some stuff. So we wish him good luck. And Dave, we wish you that you feel better. Hope your hand feels better.
I feel fine. I'm just in a lot of pain. I'm now going to go cry in a corner because Scott said that basically I'm not worth anything because I've got crap physique.
Oh, how dare he say that?
That was mean.
Yeah, it really was. I'm not a fan of that. I'll stand by you, Dave.
Thank you.
All right. Well, guys, we appreciate you tuning in. And leave us questions for the next show. I didn't say it at the beginning, but if you haven't subscribed, then let me encourage you to hit the bell and subscribe. Yeah, both of those things. Because we have several bodybuilding podcasts that come out each week. Dave Crossland, thank you for joining us. See you guys.